You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
Come on in.
I'm Lainey.
And I'm Laura Beth.
And we are Steel Magnolias.
Two sisters who love family, traditions, and all things Southern.
We've got plenty of room at our table, so pull up a chair.
Lainey. So I had a fun breakfast this weekend.
Do tell.
Mom and I went over to Leaper's Fork, which
love
is
it.
So close. I mean, it's still Franklin.
Yep.
And just a small little area with a few shops and restaurants. But we went to the Country Boy restaurant, which has been there, you know, for a long time. And it's really just good breakfast.
I've actually never been. I'd love to go.
Well, we want to go and bring Jacob next time. Because it's just so family friendly and adorable. So anyway, we went for breakfast and to enjoy a pretty day and, eat good fried green tomatoes. They do them right there
okay.
at the Country Boy. So anyway, eating my breakfast and I heard a familiar voice that caused me to look over at this one particular table. And it was Mike Wolf from American Pickers.
Love it.
He lives there in Leaper's Fork
yes.
and frequents all of those shops and restaurants. And so anyway, I just thought that was fun.
That's
that
fun.
He was there and had his wife and daughter with him and some of his daughter's friends.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Very so family friendly place.
I love it.
It was a fun time and I do want to go back soon.
Yeah.
Let's
do
Jacob.
It. Let's do it.
Anyhow, we had a cool idea because we, you know, when we named this podcast Steel Magnolias, it was based off of the concept of a steel magnolia.
Right.
Not just a movie review.
Yes.
on a great movie and play. But just that idea of someone who's walked through great adversity or trials come out with such grace.
Yes.
And as we were talking about maybe occasionally doing episodes where we interview somebody we consider a steel magnolia.
And we know some.
And we do.
And there's
know
so
some.
Many, I'm sure, that we don't know. There's hundreds out there. Yes.
But I even think it's inspiring to hear stories of somebody walking in great grace in hard trials.
For sure.
Regardless of if you know them or not. It
yes.
encourages your soul.
Yes.
And so we thought we would like to introduce you to a few that we know and ask them some questions and that kind of thing.
Yes.
So the first one that came to mind
both
for
of
both
our minds.
Of us
yes.
was our dear friend, Glenda Sutton.
Yes.
We know Dare and Glenda because they pastor a church and ministry called Family Affair Ministries. And we met them in, I couldn't remember, it was somewhere around 2004 or 2005.
Yeah.
When our home church was partnering with them to serve in the East Nashville community.
Yes.
They do so many different kinds of things that the community needs. Daycare, after school tutoring.
They go to the high schools even.
Yeah, and do like different mentoring and leadership.
Yeah.
She did like a leadership school.
But she'll even do like a chili dinner for the football team
and feed them and pray for them
yeah.
before their game and that kind of thing. But yeah, they do a back to school bash in August where they get the kids ready for going back to school with haircuts and giving them a backpack full of the school supplies they need.
Right.
Things like that. They have transitional housing for
yes, we've painted,
many scenarios.
We've painted rooms in that house. And mom's made pillows for the beds.
And drapes
yeah.
and all
yeah.
kinds of things. So they have a Christmas store where they allow people in the community that don't have money to buy gifts for their children to come and just get the gifts.
Right. In kind of an integritous way. Like
yeah.
they're shopping.
Come pick out. Right.
Yes.
They call it shopping.
Yeah.
But there's no money exchange.
Right.
So yeah, just helping them in doing projects like that is how we met them.
That's so cool. Yes.
And so.
And that bonded us for sure. Anytime
oh,
you're
yeah.
serving with someone.
It does
it
bring
bonds
a bond.
You.
Yeah.
So we call her our brown sugar cinnamon friend. She's from St. Joseph's, Louisiana, which I had to look up. I've never heard of that. It's right on the Louisiana-Mississippi border, on the Mississippi River.
Yep.
And it's just north of Natchez, Mississippi, if you're familiar with Natchez. And so she was born in the early 60s, a very turbulent time, which she's going to share some stories about. But, to set us up for what she's going to tell us about.
Yeah, so we basically just want to invite you to listen in on this conversation. And she's going to tell us a little bit to start with just foods of her grandmother's and even a little bit about her own renowned red beans and rice. So listen in as we chat with her.
Born in a little cotton town. My grandfather worked on a railroad. My grandma was a cook. She was a head cook in the only restaurant in town.
Wow.
Yeah. And her especially was, well, it was the South, so it was Southern food. And she cooked, Beatrice, she was known far and wide in Tensaw Parish as the best cook. I knew her cornbread a lot. I tweak it a little bit, but her cornbread and I do the starter from her red beans and rice, and then I've added to it a little bit.
Okay.
But every basic thing that I've learned about cooking came from Anna Beatrice Ellis, my grandmother. She served in a place called Bruno's Restaurant. And now from the era that I lived in and the place that I lived, it was the only restaurant in town. It was the only white restaurant in town. And blacks couldn't come and eat in it.
Wow.
But my grandmother was the head cook there. Yeah, really.
Wow.
And she had come to the back door to do it. When we visited her, we came to the back to see her. And once I became grown and years later, I couldn't wait to go back home. So I could go in the front door of the restaurant.
Wow.
And my other grandma, Susie Mae Battle, she always did gardening. So she was always growing something. Mm-hmm. So I had one grandma who was always cooking and another grandma who was growing stuff to cook.
Wow.
So in part of the growing up with some, I would go to my grandma B. I didn't do a lot of cooking at home with my grandma B, Beatrice, but I would go to the Bruno's restaurant. Sometimes she'd be in there and I'd watch her do things. And I would see things and know things that she did at home. But Grandma Susie, my dad's mom, whenever you went to her home, there was always a pot on the stove.
Okay.
Especially in the winter months when it was cold and it's a little chilly still now. Anytime you went in her home, you would always smell at the front door.
Okay.
But there was always a pot of stew, a pot of soup, or a pot of beans. There was always something cooking because she always made sure there was something there to feed if anytime anybody came to her home.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. And she always had tea cakes. A tea cake is A flat sweet biscuit with a flat sweet cinnamon biscuit. That's the best way I would describe it. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's not thin enough to be a cookie. It's a little fatter than a cookie, but it's a thin biscuit, you know.
Yeah.
And here's what's so amazing. Now, my grandchildren, because I'm a grandma now, I've got five grandchildren. And one of the things I heard my grandson, Nathan's five. Nathan was telling his brother, Kevin, he said, Grandma's always got something to eat. You know, and that blessed me so much because that was what I would always say. You know, I could always go to grandma's house and get something to eat. So to hear my own grandchild say that is amazing. And it just means to me that we have continued without even realizing
that
Southern hospitality. You know, it's just who we are.
It's in there.
It is in there. And even I hear people say all the time, even in church, I hear people say, you know, Pastor, you have such Southern hospitality, you know, because I'll go and greet them and I'll hug them. And I think everybody in our fellowship just about has requested red beans, rice, and cornbread as birthday presents. Well, I told you my grandma always had some beans. There was always some beans cooking, always something warm. Well, what really started my legacy with red beans and rice is when I went to the military. I was in the Air Force. And when I left home to go to the military, I was terrified because I was going on my first duty assignment after basic training was Italy. Now, I dreamed of me going to Italy, but that was my actual first assignment. And I didn't speak the language very well. I had my little book. But I knew that the thing that I was most terrified of was that I wasn't going to be able to get any beans.
That's hilarious.
I wasn't going to, the Italians wouldn't know how to make beans and cornbread. And I was thinking, you know, what am I going to eat overseas? I mean, it's like I didn't think they had other food.
You were probably right. They probably didn't know.
They didn't. They didn't. And so when I got there, I was stationed at San Vito Air Station. And when I get there, you know, and you go into the the dining hall, the chow hall to eat, you're always looking on the line for something that you recognize. And they had, you know, chicken. They had some things there, but I could never find red beans. And I would even ask sometimes, and sometimes they'd have some American cooks or they'd have some Italian cooks in there. And I said, anybody cook red beans or black-eyed peas or you guys ever do that? And even what they had, they would occasionally have cornbread, but it didn't look like, and it didn't taste like what I was accustomed to. So I asked about, I went to the commissary and I saw that they had some packets of dry red beans. And so in the barracks, you weren't allowed to, you know, cook in the barracks. So I bought a hot plate. I got a hot plate and a crock pot was just coming out. Okay. And I got a crock pot. And I was determined that I was going to, I just wanted some red beans. So my intention was just to one time cook me some beans. I just wanted some beans. Mm-hmm. So I got me, bought my little pack of beans and I got my onions and my bell peppers and the things that I knew that I needed. And I went to my barracks and I was going to secretly make these beans. Not realizing that once they start boiling, yes, it was going to smell. So I got these beans and I start cooking. Now in the barracks that I lived in, down the hall from the barracks and around the corner was the colonel's, one of the colonel's office was there. And so I had no, you know, my lightning fast brain wasn't lightning fast. So I'm cooking the beans. Oh my goodness. And when red beans get to a certain place, it just goes by and smack people, you know? And so the beans are cooking. And then I had my little hot plate, another little hot plate. So I didn't have an oven, but I knew how to make skillet bread. So I had my cornmeal and I was going to make some skillet bread.
To go with your beans.
To go with my beans, honey. And I had some rice too. You had to have some rice. So I had my beans and my rice and my cornbread. And I'm almost ready. And then I'd got me some sausage. I was putting some sausage in my beans.
That sounds so good.
Oh my goodness. So, and yet the bell peppers were there, the onions, everything was amazing. And there was a knock on my door. And the knock on my door was one of the sweet mates, people that were in the barracks, you know, down the hall that you shared a bathroom with. And I said, what are you doing? What are you cooking? You know, you're not supposed to be cooking in here. And so I tried to bribe him. I said, well, you want some here? Come on in, you can have some. The aroma was in the building. And so a little while later, one of the sergeants came down and he said, Airman Ellis, are you cooking? I said, yes, ma'am, I am. I said, I needed some red beans. I'm from Louisiana. I needed some red beans and I'm homesick. And she said, well, I need to ask you something. And I just knew I was going to be in trouble. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, do you have enough to share?
Yes.
I said, yes, I do. And she said, and the colonel wants to know if he can have some too. So before long, you know, as a result of that, you know, I started buying some little to-go containers and things. And I would cook enough beans so I could share. So I figured if I shared them, I could have some.
Yes.
And so they didn't make me get rid of my hot plate or my crock pot. The only thing was when I cooked, I had to share.
Okay.
And share she does. That is the heart of who she is.
It is.
It's the heart of her ministry. It truly is the open hand policy that she lives by, is what's mine is yours and I will create enough to share.
That's right. I think their ministry even has a tagline of God's hand extended, or something
exactly
like that,
right.
Where she'll say, use what's in your hands.
Yeah.
What do you have? Then use that to reach others.
Yeah.
So cool.
I loved that her grandchildren are seeing the Southern hospitality that is just innately in her, and
from
she wasn't even striving to do that.
Yeah, just got in her from watching her grandmother.
Yeah.
So precious. And, you know, I really was touched by when she was talking about feeling homesick.
Yeah.
And what did she want? Food that reminded her of home.
That's real.
That is, I was just thinking, that is really impactful.
Yeah.
How food brings us back to, or smells.
Smells.
Smells will take you back in a second to a place or a person or something.
Yeah.
Really, memories associated with those things.
I love that story. Is hilarious that she thought she was going to get in so much trouble.
And they're like, just share with us, please.
I love it.
Well, I also got thinking, like, what would be your red beans and rice? Like, if you were away.
Oh, good question.
For months on end, what would be that thing that you're like, I want?
Probably more, that's a hard question. Probably more just like traditional American food, like a cheeseburger.
cheeseburger. There's not much better than a good cheeseburger.
Right. And probably even French fries. Like a combo meal, really. That's, you know, funny. A Coke that tastes the way our Cokes taste. And yeah. French fries and a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably, or something probably sandwich, even a chicken sandwich.
So I was trying to, I don't know.
Like a lot of other countries do not do sandwiches like we do them here.
That's true.
So that's probably something I would really.
Cheeseburger's a good one. I think also, I am a lover of pizza.
Yes.
So pizza might be, or the southern roots. I do love a good piece of fried chicken.
Fried chicken.
Bone in.
Yeah.
Fried chicken.
Yeah.
So, I don't know
yeah.
what it would be, because
for her, it was red beans and rice.
She had to have it.
Yeah.
Going person to person to find some.
And I've never heard of a tea cake. That was news to me. The little biscuit she
almost
was talking
like
about.
Almost sounds like a scone to me.
Yeah. I would like it, because yeah. I'm a lover of all things bread, so I'm in for tea cakes. Well, cool. Well, let's continue her journey,
because
she talked to us quite a bit. So we wanted to jump in and share a little bit about her journey of her first job. This was also a very interesting story.
Well, we're sitting at a table right now at a place called Papa's Place. And at Papa's Place, which is our ministry, one of the ministry houses, the place, the reason that this table is so important, or this place is so important, is because of my childhood in Louisiana. I remember I worked in a cotton field one summer. Most people, when you turn 13, you were able to go to the cotton field, which meant early in the morning, you'd get up like 5 o'clock in the morning, you'd get dressed, you put on jeans, you'd put on layers of clothes, have a sun hat, have some gloves, have on some either really good tennis shoes or some boots, and a truck would come through and get you. And you had to have a hoe to be, you know, like the hoe in the garden.
Yeah.
You had to have a hoe, and you had to be dressed, and you would take your little lunch with you. Okay. You'd have some frozen water, a frozen drink, and something so at lunchtime you could eat. And we would start out at like 5:30 in the morning, and you would work until about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, the truck would come through the neighborhood and get the ones who were old enough to go. And we would go to like a plantation-style place, long rows of cotton. Well, the assignment was, when you got off, they had these long rows, and the assignment was to cut down the cuckleburros. So there was cotton and cuckleburros, cotton and cuckleburros. The assignment was to cut down the cuckleburros, okay? Well, so I'm going, and I'm excited because I've got a job, and I'm going to earn some money to get my summer clothes and everything, and I'm just going, and I'm just cutting. I mean, everybody's so slow, and I'm just moving fast. And by lunchtime, I had cut. I just thought that I was just great. And by lunchtime, the gentleman who had brought us out, and he said, you do realize that do you know that you're not cutting down the cuckleburros, you're cutting down the cotton? Uh-huh. Well, I thought, because the cuckleburros were these pretty purple flowers. They had purple flowers on them. They were weeds, but they had purple flowers on them. So I thought, surely you keep the flowers. And so I was cutting down the cotton.
Oh, no.
I mean, because at that point, they didn't have the cotton buds on them.
Right.
They were just green. And so I was cutting down the wrong thing.
Oh, no.
So he asked me if I would just kind of rest. I said that I had my lunch and I rested. And then when it was time after eating, everybody else was going back. He said, no, you just rest. And then when it was time to go home that afternoon and you made $12 a day, he gave me $14. And I was excited. And I told my grandma, and he told me that I didn't have to come back the next day. So I got to there and I said, Grandma, I said, he really liked me. He gave me $14 and told me I could take tomorrow off. She said, honey, he just paid you not to come back. So, but one of the things that happened that was so interesting that day, if for no other reason, my being there than to get fired in the cotton field, was that I remember on the first day, I remember it being there because there was this long, long, long rows of cotton. But at the end of it, there was this big house. And Louisiana is known for plantations. There's so this big plantation house sitting way back. And I remember seeing some ladies out there on their porch. And it seemed like they were just, you know, it's like they were just sitting there enjoying, you know, and they were, and I, you know, I know they were drinking some lemonade or some iced tea or something. And I just remember stopping and looking and thinking, wow, I would like to be able to go on that porch And one day I'll get to go into a plantation house. And I said, you know, when I go, I'm going to go and sit on the front porch and have some iced tea or some lemonade, but I'm going to take the people from the field with me. And we're going to sit on the porch and we're going to enjoy, but we're not going to sit and watch other people work in the field. Everybody from the field will be able to come and enjoy the beauty of the plantation.
Love it.
And so fast forward, let's see, I was 13. Well, I'm 57 now. And 2 years ago, we purchased a property, 20 acres, that's called Papa's Place. And that, and the yard is probably as long as the cotton rows were.
Yes.
And one of the things that we've had the privilege and the honor of doing is bringing families from the inner city, bringing families, bringing grandmas with grandbabies who live in busy, hard places. We bring them and they get to sit on the front porch and drink some lemonade or some iced tea.
And rocking chairs.
Yeah, we got rocking chairs on the porch. And I didn't even realize until my sister brought it to my attention last year. We were on the porch. She said, Glenda, do you remember saying that one day you were gonna go to the plantation house and you were gonna bring people out of the fields and that they were gonna be able to sit on the porch or be able to enjoy it and be able to, you know, experience that? I said, I'd forgotten. But God didn't forget.
That's right.
He remembered. So that's my, so Papa's Place. So Papa's Place, even the name Papa's Place is representative of Southern, you know, Southern charm. Because one of the great things, one of the things growing up in the South that I always yearned and always desired was to have a daddy. I could always picture myself going to sit in my daddy's lap or my papa's. I had a granddaddy and I called him Grandpa. And so one of the things that I enjoyed about my grandpa was when he would come home from working in the railroad, I would go sometimes and sit in his lap. Mm-hmm. And so Papa's Place represents not just my grandpa, it's a thought, but it represents our Heavenly Father.
Yeah.
Papa, he's Abba Papa. It's Papa's Place. So anybody's welcome to come and sit in his lap and enjoy him.
Yeah.
One of the things that I love being at the table with you all, one of the things that has always blessed me over the years, because you're both my friends, is when I would ever come to the table in your home and have some tea or have a meal with you. It's always like being at home. Mm-hmm. I've got a spot at your table that I love. And so it's, I sit in the same place whenever I come. And I love it because you get to see it. It's just, it's like a wraparound and it's like a big hug, you know? And that's what Southern hospitality is, a big old hug.
Wow. I am continuously amazed by her perspective on life. And this story
is so positive.
It just exemplifies it.
Yeah.
This is just one example of how she views everything that has been in her life. Uh-huh. She, even the words when she was talking about having that job, she did view it as something that she was able to go do. She said when I turned 13, then I was able to go to the cotton field.
Uh-huh.
She was excited to go earn money for her summer clothing, which is what is on the mind of every 13-year-old.
So true.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that, gosh, that really
is going to earn money or in our mom's case, learning to sew.
Yes,
to make the clothes.
To make money. To make
your
clothes,
own clothes.
Yeah.
She wanted to look lovely as well.
Yeah. I just, this is such a moving story to me because anytime you see a cotton field or there's a picture of a cotton field, only negativity
comes,
backs it
flooding.
Up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So here is my first ever cotton field story. No joke. That I have heard from someone that worked in only for a day.
Not for long.
But just, you know, someone that was immersed in that, that had something positive to say about it. First time ever that I've ever heard that.
It's amazing. And I love that she views all of this as God's redemption story. And I just think, wow, I know some of the women that sit on that porch in those rocking chairs. Some of the elderly women.
Yeah.
And I just think, wow, what Glenda must feel of... Here's the plantation home
that I have truly gotten to
literally
open up.
Brought the women to bring, sit in the rocking chair and drink lemonade.
Yeah, that's a great point. Women much more senior than
her.
Right.
Right.
And y'all, this plantation is no joke. stunning. It's so just beautiful. North of Nashville. I don't think she really shared much about the actual location, but just north of Nashville. And she did say that it's 20 acres, and it is. It is as picturesque of a plantation as you can imagine.
So pretty.
Tons of land in front of the house.
Long drive, gated.
Long drive up to this white mansion home. Uh-huh. And
big columns. Yeah, just so sweet.
It is and stunning. It is
truly God's redemption.
Yeah.
Story. Yeah.
Leave it to a sister to remind her of that, right?
That's right. Well, I told Glenda the first time I came there.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know. I just picture you. And I hadn't heard this story at that time.
Okay.
Now, this was my second time to hear it.
Yeah.
But I hadn't heard it at this time. And when I parked the car and went in that home, I said, Glenda, I just have an image of you in a big Southern Belle dress with a fan out on the porch.
That is awesome.
And she said, that might be a good cover for my book.
Yes.
And amen. Then after I heard this, I'm like, now wouldn't that be redemption?
Yeah.
She's the Scarlett O'Hara.
She is.
Of the Tara plantation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we do have just a little bit more of the conversation we're going to share today, but I think
it's so good that we...
Let's do a part two,
gonna
right?
Going to have to do a part two.
Okay.
We don't want to cut it out.
She had so many good stories.
Yeah.
And it was fun to get to actually go out to this plantation to record. So we're going to close by letting her talk about, Lainey asked her a little bit about, like, does she have any childhood heroes and, if there was anything, any person or persons that stood out. And so you're actually going to get to hear her talk about that. And it'll feed right into, the organization that she
her
runs
ministry
today.
That she's running, yeah. Where that name came from.
Yeah.
Yes. My childhood hero was Uncle Bill and Mr. French. I watched the sitcom that came on Family Affair. Yes. As a matter of fact, that's what our ministry is named for. It's Family Affair.
It
was because as a young kid, my mom would be working and she was had gone to nursing school. So I had I'm the oldest and I had my younger sister and my younger brother. And I would run home in the evenings so I could watch Family Affair. My mom was a single mom and my sister and my brother and I, we had a really difficult childhood. So when I would go home in the evenings, I'd watch Family Affair. And I would lose myself in that family because Uncle Bill was the best dad. And we didn't have a dad in our home. You know, we had different fathers. So my mom had never been married. And some little cotton town. So a lot of things go on in the South.
Yeah.
And so we didn't, there was no father in the home. So I would watch Family Affair and Uncle Bill was the best dad. I wanted a dad just like Uncle Bill. Now, I know Mr. French was a man, but I always wanted I wanted a mom just like Mr. French. Because there was always a meal there, and I think it was a semblance. There was always a meal there. There was always harmony. There was no matter what the struggle was in the sitcom. By the end of the show, it was all well. I know it was written in the script, and I felt like I was sissy because I was the oldest, and I had to always look after my sister and my brother. And she was surely was Buffy, and he was surely Jody, and she even had a Miss Beasley doll. And so I always felt like my job was to take care of them and protect them. And I was always trying to find my place in the world because everything that I had to do, I had to make sure that they were okay. Mm-hmm. Because I was the one left in charge most of the time, just like the sitcom. And then years later, when God called me into ministry, then the name Family Affair, because family, by that time, I'd learned about the body of Christ being the family of God. And I knew that everything concerning the Father was His affair. So that's why Family Affair became the name of the ministry.
So that is not at all where I thought she would go with childhood hero.
Me neither.
I don't know why. I just assumed it was going to be somebody from her community that stood out.
Yeah.
Or
I don't even picture her having time to watch television.
Because knowing how
she's always doing something. So
but it really surprised me that that show would have been that impactful on her life that she would name her ministry Family Affair.
Yeah.
But it also got me thinking of just the power of media, both for the good and the bad.
Yeah.
Like,
think about even this podcast. Every time we load this a new episode up, I have to mark it as explicit or clean. It's one or the other.
Wow.
And I can't tell you how many podcasts I come across that I get kind of disappointed that I'm like, they couldn't have kept that
left
conversation
that out so that I can listen in the car with my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all they were doing was talking about food.
Right. I think I told you there's a chef that I just stopped listening because he just dropped so many.
Yeah.
Curse words. So, yeah. But it is amazing, the power of media. I know somebody who went into teaching after seeing Dead Poets Society.
Whoa.
Like, I will be a teacher. I'm going to do that.
Wow.
Like, that's a big thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, but I just, that was a shock to me that that was so impactful.
Well, and I feel like all the time I'm mentioning on here as we go through different subjects and topics, a way that said topic is portrayed in a movie.
That's true.
Right? Whether it be an accent or, you know, some situation that was portrayed. So, yeah.
Well, I'm amazed, too, when you do travel the world and you see the impact on that our country is making on the world through media.
Yeah.
More than any other country.
Sure.
By far.
Sure.
So that can be both good and bad. And I think like, wow, we're going to have to know that.
Yeah.
You know, there are consequences for all of that.
Yeah. That power and influence holds some weight.
Yeah.
And
anyhow. Yeah. So.
Okay. Soapbox. Hello. Well, she's penning a book.
Yeah.
And she really is. She's not just, and some people say I could write a book. She literally had a couple of pages out typed up that she was sitting next to when we did her interview. So we didn't read those, but I can't wait to read anything she writes. And we, of course, will keep y'all abreast to that.
Yeah,
but like we said, this deserves a part two.
Yeah, and I think we do it next week because we've introduced you to her.
Yeah.
It made me think you've smelled her red beans and rice. Now
right.
You gotta eat it. You know, when.
Yes. So, our fellow Steel Magnolia from Louisiana, Glenda Sutton, we will do a part two for her next week where she dives into even more stories and even more Southern cultural specific subject matters that she loves talking about. So that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. We hope that y'all enjoyed it.
Be encouraged and keep a good perspective no matter what you're walking through this week.
Amen to that. All right. See y'all.
You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and Fleet Services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.